Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Money and Markets on the Solari Report with John Titus and Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm back in the pool house, John.
I can see that.
You can see that. Okay, so we have a lot to talk about today. I've been traveling around America, which inspired me to propose the theme. You adjusted it because we've used it before. Tell us what it is.
Well, the theme is that the center cannot hold, but because we've used it before and we need to use it again, it'll be the center really cannot hold. And then some down the road, it's like the center is coming apart at the seams. But well, it's pretty grim right now.
Here's what I saw traveling, because I've done, when I arrived in Shelbyville last night, I had done 38 hours of drive time all around America. And we had a great meet and greet in Tulsa. I was up in Missouri. I saw Greg Hunter and his beautiful, beautiful farm where he's living. And, and I, you know, so I've been to a lot of places, and I've been watching not just how people are behaving and what's happening to them, but also how the corporations are taking advantage. And we'll talk about that later. But, it, you know, what you're watching is a systemic, it's a model, and it's systemic attack on America.
It's harvesting America from the inside.
Yep.
No doubt about that. And we'll see, it's really going on around the world. The kind of the brinksmanship of the people in control, they've lost control.
I had an amazing conversation with a wonderful attorney at the meet and greet we did in Oklahoma. And he said to me, I'd made comments before we had Q&A, and he came over and he said, "What do you mean about our children are being poisoned?" So I said, okay. And I had a couple of subscribers with me who started helping with examples. But I said, you know, I quoted the statistics, 54% have autoimmune disease and or chronic illness. And, you know, a lot can't afford to be tested. And the pediatrician I trust says it's 70%+. And there's, you know, we go through the fluoride and the deterioration, all the different things. And he's looking at me and realizing, oh, my God, you're right.
Yeah.
And it was sort of a wake up moment. So you know, I think what I'm seeing is people are starting to realize it. In other words, their paradigm, their framework is changing, and they realize, okay, we're in a war. How do we play to win?
Right. Not only that, I think the other penny to drop for people is these people, these criminals, they're playing for keeps.
Right. So I told you one of my favorite latest stories is from Kunstler, where he says, you know, the debate in America has come down not between right and left and conservative or liberal. It's between the sane and the insane. And the sane have had with the insane.
Right. We're done. Yeah.
Right.
We're done. Okay. Now, on that note of insane, let's lead off with the genocide in Gaza. There's one story this week, and really it's just a headline that's the war on Gaza from Arab News. Military building next to Iran's embassy in Syria hit in suspected Israel attack. It is an Israel attack. It's a military building. It's not the embassy itself. It's just a military building. So to summarize, Israel is leveling a genocide, waging a genocide against Gaza. And while it's doing this, it reaches out and willy-nilly bombs a military building right next to the embassy of a country it's not at war with on the same day that it bombs the hospital in Gaza, and B, slaughters relief workers trying to provide food aid, for which, by the way, Netanyahu apologized. But they're on a tear. They've lost control, and they're hoping to draw the U.S. into the war. And frankly, I have to wonder whether that's going to happen, because Biden is not running the show at all. He's not there. He's gone.
Right. So there is a long history of Obama not getting along well with Netanyahu. So if anybody's running the White House, in my opinion, or having a major influence, it's Obama. And Obama is not a Netanyahu fan. So it's one of the few things I have in common.
I've yet to see anybody in the U.S., Obama, Biden, or otherwise, do anything other than move their lips and squawk about and bitch about what Israel is doing, but doing nothing to stop
They're genocide. Sending money. They're sending money and missiles. They're funding it.
Right. Exactly. They're funding it.
Watch,
you know, watch what they do. Not don't listen to what they say.
So here's the challenge. The challenge is you have a decision to move 2 million people to Egypt. And if Egypt won't take them, you're going to kill them.
Right.
And you're going to keep killing them until Egypt or someone takes them. You're leveling their whole infrastructure. And you have Jared Kushner announcing that the waterfront properties are going to make a great, you know, attractive investment. And it's that clear. It's just basically, we want the oil and gas. We want the land. We're going to kill you or move you and take your stuff. And that's right. It. And there's the one good thing I can say about Netanyahu, he's always very clear. And I would say that this is pretty simple and pretty clear. And the question is, if the world allows that to happen, and they've allowed many things like this to happen before, but if the world allows this to happen, that's going to have a dramatic impact on how often this happens elsewhere.
Right. It's a horrible precedent. Right. And we'll get to another case of bad precedent later, but no one seems to be thinking about the precedent you're setting by doing nothing and allowing things to go on unchecked.
The precedent you're setting is, if they can do it there, they can do it in America. That's
They're already
the
doing it in the U.S., and we're going to see that in a few minutes.
Right, but it's more subtle. It's a little bit more subtle, but it's getting less and less subtle every day.
It is getting less subtle.
Right.
Let's continue on with the theme of insanity overseas, the war in Ukraine. This next story just really says it all. Macron says Ukraine may soon fall. Actually, he says quite a bit more than that. Ukraine could fall very quickly, Macron said during an event. He told a newspaper. Macron said that European countries, even though that Ukraine is going to fall absent any support, Macron said that European countries should not place limits on themselves when talking about helping Ukraine to prevent the spread of defeatist sentiment. Against this background, Macron emphasized the importance of securing military aid for Ukraine. So Ukraine's going to fall. Russia's winning that war. So let's shovel more money in that direction.
I still don't understand what the plan is.
Yeah. It sounds like a looting plan to me. It sounds like the friends and cronies plan is in full force.
Well, here's the question. I mean, does the plan to take the land and build a new Ukraine stand? You know, is there a deal with Putin or not?
No. I'll tell you why. Because Macron has also said, this is how insane this guy is. He's gonna send French troops to Ukraine independently of NATO, to which Putin said, if you do that, you rest assured that French troops will be the priority targets for the Russian military. Okay. We're going to kill them first, bud.
So, my favorite quote, God does not bless a mess. We've got a real mess here. And this could go many different ways. And if NATO starts putting ground troops in there, we got a mess. So
we're sending F-16s. Of course, we also sent Abrams tanks, which Russia picked off like a turkey shoot. General Dynamics, Wonder Tank got picked off and destroyed within a week. It took to kill those.
So nothing has worked. Last night in Nashville, one of the local entrepreneurs who's very, very successful and very connected to what's going on in the economy said Amazon is closing down warehouses that are in the middle of construction. And I told you when I was in Oklahoma, I walked up to a Q-Trip where I always go to get coffee in the morning when I'm there. And there was a handwritten sign in the window, store closed. It's this huge.
Handwritten sign.
Store closed. It had been open the night before. So, I don't know if that's lack of staff or bankruptcy. Wow. It was shocking. And you think, what, you constantly get the sense of a full-fledged, sort of implosion. But in addition, you have every indication. So I think I sent you the new change in the Airbnb terms and conditions, that they are not responsible after June for major disruptions. Uh-huh. So you get all these signals that a variety of players are preparing for major disruptions.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know if I'd read that into that Airbnb change. It's just, to me, it's just more part and parcel of the ongoing graft.
Right. I couldn't agree more. But yeah. Again, it's an indication that the center really cannot hold.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's keep it going. Center cannot hold. Take two in Ukraine. We come to the Crocus Mall from The Sun in the UK. Vlad vows revenge. Putin says Moscow concert hall gunman who killed 133 tried to flee Ukraine despite, wait for it, ISIS claiming terror attack. A lot of pictures here we have to scroll through. I'm sure your subscribers have seen most of them before we get to the text here. The Russian president, 71, addressed the nation and promised his people he would punish those responsible for the massacre. ISIS-K, a brutal splinter cell of the death cult called the CIA, has claimed responsibility for the savage attack. So Putin knows full well who's behind this. A furious Putin attempted to suggest the gunman tried to escape to Ukraine after the barbaric terrorist act. Well, of course they did, because the operation was run out of Ukraine. So the gloves are off. The powers that be in the West are not. It's over in Ukraine. Okay, your fantasy of defeating Russia is over, and yet they're still lashing out like this with terror attacks.
I rarely feel this, but I would give anything to be in a fly in the wall at Langley to understand what the plan was and what the plan is now.
Yeah, I would too.
We know, but with Newland gone, the plan is turning, whatever that means. I don't know what it means yet.
That's a good point. Newland is gone.
Right.
So there is a change afoot, okay? But I guess almost within a week, let's switch now to FedWatch. And on the heels of the terror attack in Russia at the mall, we come to this story, okay? This is Baltimore, what we know about the Baltimore Bridge collapse. And I can preface this by saying, what do we know about the Baltimore Bridge collapse?
Almost nothing.
Not much.
Not much.
So here's a big summary of it. Let's go to what we know. 980 foot, 5 foot long. We know that. Okay. The bridge is 1.6 miles long. We know that. 6 construction workers dead. We know that. The ship was moving at 8 knots, which is roughly 9 miles an hour. Okay. All right. That's kind of interesting. And then we get some data on prior shipwrecks. How often does this happen? From 60 over that 55-year period, there were 35 major bridge collapses worldwide due to a ship or barge collisions, with a total of 342 people killed. 18, so half of those collapses happened in the U.S., and that's really it. What we don't know is, what kind of warning system do you have out there in the water? When was the first warning sign that something was amiss, and that if your system had been working, you could have tried to stop it? How close does the ship going 9 miles an hour have to be? What's the closest it could get to the bridge before it's going to make contact or it could be stopped by tugboat? We don't know any of that.
Right.
They're not anything.
Right. Here's what we know. It's either sabotage, right, you know, including an act of war is the possibility, or it's an accident. And right, what's interesting is when you think through, you know, I give the chances of sabotage much higher than accident. That's just my guess. But
okay, now the question is it sabotage from Russia or sabotage from outside the U.S. or sabotage in the U.S. to make it a binary proposition?
Impossible to tell. Now, we know that the Moscow shooting just happened, and we know that Putin has indicated, you know, you do things like that, we'll do things like that back. So, you know, that gives it a certain coincidence, okay? But right, I think it's impossible to tell because it could be either. We know that there's leadership here that wants to break up the United States, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, no question about that.
Right. So, or, you know, we know there's big troop carriers stuck in that harbor. You know, it could be somebody who wants to make sure they stay stuck, right? So, I think it's impossible to tell whether it's internal or external. But the thing that most struck me about as I tried to think through this, because normally, you know, we would have a lot more intelligence by now about what happened. And it's surprising how little good intelligence we have.
It's next to nothing.
It's almost worse if it's an accident. I mean, if you watch the state of implosion around the country, you know, if this is an accident, it's almost more frightening to me than if it's sabotage. Does that make sense? You're kind of looking at me. What?
Well, let me add two things to the coincidence column. One is it was the Francis Scott Key Bridge, Francis Scott Key being the author of the Star Spangled Banner. That's number one.
Right.
And number two, Baltimore is basically, it's pretty close to the Mason-Dixon line. I mean, it's dead center dividing the U.S. North and South.
Right. Right. And well, here's the question. Which ports pick up the business? If Baltimore slows or shuts down, you know, is it New Orleans?
Portsmouth.
Right.
Would be a big pickup, yeah.
Right. So Virginia
Portsmouth,
picks
Virginia.
It up.
Yeah. Right. I've been a big part of it, sure.
I don't know. But to me, if it was really an accident, given the need for harbor masters to protect the infrastructure, and given the history of, you know, these kinds of accidents happening, I'm shocked, given what the protocols are, that it could be an accident. If it was, it says, again, the center cannot hold. The wheels are coming off the bus. That's what it's
yeah.
To me.
We've harped on this for well over a year, which is the incompetence. I mean, every week it comes up, the incompetence right. At the top levels throughout government, throughout corporations. And we're not done today by a long stretch with the incompetence at the top. It's incredible.
Well, but here's what I see, and I attribute it to what I call the great poisoning. What I see going around America is there is a tremendous deterioration in cognition. You cannot believe. So again, 38 hours of drive time over the last week. I can't tell you how many more accidents there are on the highway. It's just constant. It's scary.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah. About half of the travel miles I log are on a bicycle. I'm not kidding.
Do you see more accidents?
Not really.
Okay.
But I'm in the habit.
You're not on the big highways.
I have a certain well-worn path that I go down, and it's limited. It's very limited.
I'm seeing a lot of accidents.
Yeah, I'm not wheeling around the country. I'm not driving 38 hours anywhere, anytime.
Right.
I fill up my gas tank about once a month.
When I come back, John, I'll come as a trucker.
Okay, you mentioned earlier who's picking apart the U.S. Let's go to the next story in FedWatch. This is just unbelievable. I didn't do that. Biden reportedly has no idea he issued Trans Day of Visibility proclamation. He did that, by the way, Trans Day of Visibility for the trans crowd on Easter Sunday. There's Biden. Boy, he does not look there. He's gone. He's out to lunch. I didn't do that, Biden reportedly said when asked about the trans proclamation. Real Clear Politics' Philip Wegman reports. When asked about Speaker Johnson's claim that he had done that, Biden replied he's thoroughly informed. Well, the record's clear. He did do it. It angered a lot of people, justifiably so. Of course, the biggest takeaway from this is obviously who's running the show, because it is not this guy. He's out. He's gone. He's gone.
Right. So,
and he stands a very good chance of winning re-election. Should leave, point that out. I think he's going to win now. I give him a better than 50-50 odds of winning now. I think that's the plan. You can do anything undercover, this guy. They just proved it with this story.
Right. But if you look at what the polls probably really are, you're going to have to do a lot of election rigging. I mean, that you believe you can add 40 points with election rigging if you think he's going to win.
I do whatever they want. A child's play. Child's play. He just did a trans day on Easter Sunday and then said, I didn't do it.
Right.
It's coming. Brace yourself. It's coming.
I couldn't agree more. Okay, let's keep going.
Let's keep it going with more just breathtaking conclusions from the press. Like, are you reading the same story I am? Here we go. Biden administration made $236 billion in improper payments last year, according to the Government Accountability Office. That's a report they just put out. An estimated $236 billion in improper or incorrect payments was made under the Biden administration last year, with Medicare and Medicaid accounting for $100 billion of that total, according to the GAO. Right? GAO believes that $236 billion estimate potentially does not represent the full extent of improper payments because there's a bunch of things they weren't even looking at. The group pointed out, here's where it's like, are you reading the right story? The group pointed out the improper payments suggest a material deficiency or weakness in internal controls. I think that $236 million suggests that it's intentional because no amount of payments that massive could be made unless you had a plan to do so.
So here's what's so important to understand about this. Once they approved FASB 56 in 2018, in 2019, they had a secret process run by a secret group of people where they could take as many of the improper payments as they wanted and make them dark. Okay. So that's going on, that taking whatever amount of money and taking it dark and keeping it dark is going on. This is in addition. This is just what they're doing in the public books that they didn't bother to take dark.
to put it in gambling sports terms, we're going to spot you fraudulent accounting.
Right.
And you still come back and like, hey, we misspent $236 million. Even while we're like, you can pad all this stuff and you're still like, hey, we can't account for $236 billion. Wow.
Right.
What's the real number? A trillion? $2 trillion?
Well, as of 2015, it was $21 trillion that we've been able to count.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
So, you know, I go back to the fundamental problem. Your pension fund is buying treasury securities. The money goes into treasury and then it disappears out the back door. Your taxes are going into treasury and then the money disappears out the back door. What doesn't disappear out the back door that gets spent, most of it gets spent on interest, which you never needed if you'd issued directly from the treasury, number one.
Right.
So that's a scam. And number two, a lot of the money that is being spent, you know, by direct appropriations is being spent illegally, you know, including to finance immigrants coming across the border to employ the government. So the money is being spent in unconstitutional and criminal ways. And I go back to what the Senate staffer said to me, you know, over 20 years ago, HUD is being run as a criminal enterprise, but HUD is run by the Department of Justice, the Department of Treasury, and the New York Fed. Right. It's a mortgage finance program. So, if it's being run as a criminal enterprise, they're running it a criminal enterprise, which at the time I said to them, I don't disagree. So we have a huge money pot and credit pot that is being run as a criminal enterprise that is destroying the country. It's operating outside the law. And the question for all of us, whether it's, you know, our pension funds putting money in, or our taxes putting money in, what are we going to do about it?
Yeah, what are we going to do about it?
Right.
Another question, which we're going to get to in this very next story, is what is their plan with all this? What's the end game with all this?
Right.
And that really comes to the head in this next story. To me, this is the most disturbing story of the week because it's so insane that it has to be deliberate. Let me get into it. Seizing Russian money could devastate Euroclear, according to Reuters. Okay. So they've got $300 billion of Russia assets frozen over there. Here's the deal. Look at this. The entire global financial system could be jeopardized if Euroclear, which is in Belgium, the main EU clearinghouse holding hundreds of billions of euros in frozen Russian money, could collapse the whole financial system if it's sued over using the money to fund Kiev, a senior bloc official just told Reuters. Okay, so don't seize the money then. The West has frozen roughly $300 billion in holdings belonging to the Russian central bank. Okay. Of that amount, Euroclear holds around $205 billion in assets. And the EU is reportedly fast tracking the decision to send Kiev the first tranche of up to 3 billion euros in profits generated from the frozen Russian assets as early as July. So let's call that $3 billion the upside. What's the immediate downside? Well, should the West proceed with expropriating, stealing the funds, the Russian central bank is likely to seize around 10 times as much, 11 times, $33 billion of Euroclear money held in the National Securities Deposit in Moscow. So that's just out of the gate. They're going to take $3 billion on the upside, and they know they're going to suffer right out of the gate.
Right.
$33 billion loss. Okay, let's keep it going. Moscow has repeatedly warned that it will respond in kind if the West goes through with threats to confiscate Russian assets. The finance ministry said last month that Western states and companies themselves still have holdings in Russia that could be jeopardized if the frozen funds are tapped. So on top of the $33 billion, you also have assets in Russia, okay? That's going to hurt some Western banks. So here we come to the punchline. If Western banks begin suing Euroclear for the loss of their money invested in Russia, that's the mechanism how Euroclear could be totally emptied, the official warned. Euroclear Bank boasts over 37 trillion euros in assets in custody globally. But if it runs out of liquidity amidst a litany of lawsuit, the Belgian central bank may be forced to withdraw its license, causing a global financial crisis, the official warned. So for the upside of $3 billion, the powers that be are going to risk deliberately a global financial crisis when Euroclear melts down, which it will.
Okay, so the official story, again, makes no sense. They right. have the ability to print whatever money they want to fund Ukraine. And they have the ability under the U.S. administrative policies to spend it secretly, right?
Right, right.
Okay, so if the right. central banks can print money and they can spend it, you know, so in the scheme of the money disappearing from the federal government, $33 billion is chump change.
Right. It's chump change.
It's chump change. So the only reason I would take the Russian assets is because I wanted to trigger an asset war where they were seizing assets, I were seizing assets. And, you know, I go back to the World Economic Forum, it's 2030 and you have no assets. How are you going to seize all the assets in the world? Well, this is a perfect way to start the process, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It is. Right.
Right. So
the tumbling dominoes.
Yeah. If they have the ability to finance the $33 billion secretly, and they have multiple ways of doing it, John, you know, why would you do it this way and start off an asset war? The only reason you would do is that's what you want to do.
Right.
Right.
That's what you want to do. It's intended. You're causing a global financial crisis on purpose. That's what you want.
Right. Exactly. So that's the question. Do they want to start a global financial crisis or did they want to use these kinds of threats to, you know, basically ensure that everybody agrees to print the $33 billion? I can't tell.
Notice that throughout all of these discussions about Russian assets, you never comes up like, well, what are the legal mechanisms? What's the law say? It's all like, well, if we do this, they're going to punch that. And if we steal that, they're going to steal this. The law is out the window. It's gone. And on that score, I must remind subscribers, if they don't already know, that I did a video.
Uh-huh.
I released a first video, and it is called Please Refrain from Urinating on the Rule of Law, Madam Secretary, which is advice that is not being heeded. But the idea is that the point is that you're setting horrible precedent by seizing those assets. It's a disaster to do that.
You're going to show the video clips now or later?
No, I'm not going to show the video clips. I mean, it's, you know, that wasn't really on our agenda. I'm just reminding people I've got a video up.
Yeah.
And it's on this, it's the notion that there's no rule of law. And you have people in the top, you have a cabinet level official, finance minister, Yellen, who's openly denigrating the rule of law right out in the open. No discussion of legality at all.
So I'm going to tell everybody, you've got to go see this video. We have it up in Salieri in the News, but it's up at Best Evidence on your YouTube channel, and you can you access it at Substack too?
Yeah, you can get it. Okay, yeah. So you can get to it. I have Odyssey and BitChute as well. I don't think it automatically loads to Rumble. I have to do that manually. But YouTube, Odyssey, but BitChute, and yeah, I got a couple of Substacks on this one.
But
I've gone to a shorter video format,
right,
just to cover like discrete topics that I can refer to later.
So this shows you. This gets you right down to the heart of the issue. So when you wrote the sovereignty wrap-up, that's what we talked about. You either have law or you don't.
Right.
And you can't run a system where some people have to obey the law and others can't. You know, it's not going to work. And this gets right down to the heart of the issue about whether we're going to be the rule of man or the rule of law. And the United States, as the Lavrov has said, is not agreement capable.
Right. Well, more to the point, the U.S. is now openly saying it's a rules-based international order, which is a gloss. It's a nice-sounding gloss for that's rule of man. Rule of law is right. No, we don't want that. It's our rules-based international order. That's how you should interpret rules-based international order. Our rules. What we say goes, period.
If you watch what she's doing and what she's saying, and this is what you bring in on the video, I would say we are now dealing with the sane versus the insane.
Yes.
And what they are saying and doing is insane. And if it is allowed to stand, we're going to a very dark place.
Yes, so. We are. Yeah, and we're going at a quick rate. Right. We're going at a fast rate. Okay, let's keep it going in FedWatch with this next story. We talked about this last week or 2 weeks ago. Last episode is a potential. The potential is reality now from the nation. Why Silicon Valley reactionaries love RFK Jr. So there's his new running mate, Shanahan, Nicole Shanahan. That's RFK Jr.'s answer to Kamala Harris, and it's a pretty robust answer. And introducing Shanahan to his audience, Kennedy made a remarkable comparison between her and his notorious grandfather, Joseph Kennedy. Grandfather was notorious for his shady business practices and gangster connection, his sexual predation, and his ultra-right-wing politics. How ultra are we talking about? Well, in the 30s, he wanted to make Adolf Hitler overlord of Europe. I'd say that's pretty right-wing. The logic here seems to be in Shanahan's pick. It takes a crook to catch a crook. Reminding the world of the crookedness of paterfamilias makes a strange sense because Robert Kennedy is trying to square a circle of presenting himself as a rebel against big business, including big tech, while choosing as his running mate the very avatar of Silicon Valley plutocracy. Shanahan is a telling pick because she illustrates how Kennedy's chaotic and bizarre presidential run is deeply intertwined with a reactionary faction inside the world of big tech. They're referring to Peter Thiel, that among others, that has embraced
and
the politics.
Musk has
embraced the politics of necro-futurism, which is an interesting term. These big tech right-wingers have decided to co-opt boomer nostalgia for the Kennedy family to sell a new version of Make America Great Again that emphasizes the supposed scientific wonders that will emerge from dismantling the regulatory state and allowing Google and Tesla to run everything themselves and Amazon.
So a couple things, because I've tried to think long and hard about this one. I watched the video that the campaign made of her and her background, and actually she came off much better than I expected. So, she came off as a pretty intelligent, interesting person. What is, to me, the fundamental issue here is Kennedy needs to get on the ballot, and to get on the ballot, he needs a lot of money. And, if you look at his fundraising, he wasn't getting enough money to get on the ballots. I'm assuming one of her attractions is she's willing to fund him on the ballot. She was the person who funded the $4 million Super Bowl ad that he ran.
Right.
Okay. So this is someone who can put up, $25, $50, $100 million and get the Kennedy campaign on all the ballots. Now, here's the problem. And part of the attraction is Kennedy's very worried about AI. And so he wants intellectual capacity to deal with tech, but you don't need to make that person the vice president to get that capacity. That's number one. If the number one job of the vice president is to serve as the president if anything should go wrong, and somebody who has the competency and gravitas to do that would never make it a pro quo to swap money for the VP slot. In other words, if this person has the gravitas to be VP, the first thing they would say is, we need to win, and the way we're going to win is I'll put up the money, and we get a VP candidate who can win more than California.
Right.
Right? And so by her taking the step, it proves she's not competent to be the president of the United States.
That is an absolutely indispensable and fundamentally accurate insight. That is excellent.
Right. So
she just made a deal for a fundamental and key part of the republic. So if she can bargain away this part of the republic, she can bargain away the rest of it too.
Right. And if you're competent to be the president in waiting, then you have to have the gravitas to, you know, to always play to win.
Yeah.
You know, first and foremost at protecting the Republic and leading the Republic and making the Republic great.
Yeah.
This doesn't do it. And what it tells me is, you know, anybody with her experience and age, no matter how bright, no matter how intelligent, no matter how positive, no matter how well-meaning, she does not have the experience or knowledge to play the game to win.
No, and absolutely not.
She just proved it. So,
moreover, bargaining like that with key parts of the Republic, key parts of the Constitutional Republic, you know, that is so on brand for Silicon Valley. It's not even funny. Like, we're going to do whatever we want, whatever surveillance we want, whatever deals we want with the NSA and CIA. You can't stop us. It's so fundamentally short-sighted. It's just perfect that she would do something like that.
Well, here's the thing. I don't know enough about her to know where she sits on all the surveillance and privacy issues. I don't know. I just, she's a blank. So I have more to learn in that respect because there is nothing.
Well, she was married to the head of Google.
Right. So,
is that a hint?
Right. So she either has a bad attitude about it or she's naive. But, you know, one of the things that happened, she married the head of Google and then she had a vaccine injured child. And that started to change her paradigm. And I've seen that happen to a lot of good people. They have one paradigm. Something goes wrong. Their paradigm starts to change. So I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, at the same time, somebody who's learning to change their paradigm doesn't qualify them to be president of the United States. So, So I'm going to give Kennedy the benefit of the doubt in terms of, you know, she's a good person. She's a nice person. She's an intelligence person. Her interview that they published certainly impressed me, but that doesn't qualify her to be president or vice president of the United States.
No, she's an automatic DQ to me. Just, I mean, I don't even need to waste time on it, and I won't.
But here's the problem. We're now down to three campaigns, all of which are supportive of the Gaza genocide, two of which supported the mass atrocity in the United States and worldwide.
Right. That's automatic DQ one and two right there. Either one, you're out, and she's out on two counts.
And two of them don't have a VP candidate that you would want to be president. Yeah. Although, certainly, I think if your goal is to win California and defeat Biden, you know, it's a good pick. If you're Kennedy and you want to take California at all costs, no matter what it costs you in the heartland, you know, I think she defeats Kamala Harris. Don't you?
Maybe.
Okay.
I think we have no idea. Silly. It's moot.
Well, but
Biden's going to steal. It's going to steal this whole thing anyway. This is ridiculous to even talk. The idea of an election presupposes the rule of law and a functioning republic. That ship sailed a dozen years ago. So count me out on watching.
If I was going to do the rape of Russia, I can in the United States. If I was going to rape America, you know, the Trump team and the Biden team can both do an excellent job at that.
Boy, it is quite the dog and pony show on that score, isn't it?
Right. So
the talent show, I should say.
Right. So I don't underestimate the ability of the Trump team to engineer the rape of Russia, and because of that, to rig the election.
Yeah, look at Trump's cabinet appointments alone last time. You can see that. I mean, just that's a ball game right there.
Well, but don't assume that, you know, so there are different Mr. Global has different factions in the middle management. And if you look at—
Yeah, they're all criminal in Trump's case, every single one of them. Barr, Mnuchin, Pence. Right. I mean, it's just top to bottom scum.
Right, but we're now talking about which dog is going to get the beef.
Okay.
And the way you get the beef is you rig the elections. Right? You get control of the machinery.
Yeah, well, I don't— if Trump's not the rigger of the election, then he's not going to win. So he's not the rigger of the election, is he?
You know,
what am I missing?
What we're missing is there are multiple machineries that have the ability to rig election in different places.
Let me ask you this. Is Trump the New York Fed?
No.
Okay.
Biden's the New York Fed.
Looks that way to me.
Right.
He's their dog. No.
Right.
Because you could do anything under him.
Well, I go back. It's called the central bank warfare model, right?
Yeah.
So if Biden's the New York Fed, is Trump DOD?
Yeah, well, if Biden's the president, is Trump the vice president? Okay. Maybe. Congratulations for second place, bud.
You know, I the reason I'm saying this is it is conceivable to me that either group could succeed at the rigging. Do you see what I mean? In other words, I can't predict who's going to win the election, because if you look at the choices of who can rig what, I don't begin to have the intelligence I need to know.
Well, the top dog, okay, there can't be two kings in a kingdom. Okay? Let's start with that.
Right.
No such thing as two kings in a kingdom. There's one. And in the West, the king, and this has been true since 1694 at least, is the money power, not the military power. Military power is number two. It's been number two for centuries.
Right.
And the money power is behind Joe Biden.
Right. But there's plenty of money power. If you look at who, you know, the reason Trump won was the money power. Enough of that money power switched to Trump. Okay.
Or he was installed by the money power. In 2016. Yeah. That's another interpretation.
He was installed by the money power. But what the money power cares about, John, is they have a plan for how they're going to make the most money and switch the most assets in the next game. And the question is, which team will do the best job of delivering up America on a platter?
Okay. And it's a pretty close race, right?
Yes. It is that's what I'm trying to say.
It's a pretty close race. Where it is not close at all, and we just saw it, is that you have way more cover under a guy who's brain dead in the office, and what you can do under him. You can do stuff and have him have brain dead, turn around and say, I didn't do it. And just people just move on from it.
You can have a theater lair. And then you can implement quietly behind him and do whatever you want. Whereas Trump is hard to manage.
He's difficult to manage.
He's difficult to manage.
He's tough to manage.
He's tough to manage. Yeah. I'm just telling you, this race is close. This is a close race. And
the upcoming talent show is undetermined. We don't know yet. We'll have to stay tuned. Is for more outrageous.
Here's the question on Kennedy's choice. Did Kennedy's choice just give an advantage to the Trump team?
That's or did it give an advantage to the Biden team? It's a good question.
Good question.
Where does Kennedy fit in all this?
I don't know.
Here's the question. Where would all that Silicon Valley money go if Kennedy's not in there with Shanahan? Whose campaign does it get dumped into? Probably Trump.
I don't think so. I think
Peter Thiel, David Sacks, Chamath Palihapitiya, all these fascists. They're please. They're not going to get behind Biden. They're going to get behind Trump. But now they're not. Now the money's not going to Trump. It's going to Kennedy.
I got to think about this a little bit more. But I have to tell you, I think the Biden team has been better for big tech than Trump, but
just tell that to big tech. I'm just telling you who big tech is and what they're doing with their money. Right. I mean, look at Trump's not without financial difficulty right now. You don't think he could use some of that Silicon Valley scratch about right now?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now this is hurting him. Kennedy Shanahan's hurting him.
Yep.
It's hurting him where it counts.
Well, but remember, it kills, I don't know. Let's see how this plays out. This is the intelligence we have to figure out, you know, who can rig what and who's going to do the best job for the money power. My number one concern, though, is I want to make sure Salier Report subscribers are playing to win in this environment, because the change is going to be dramatic.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
We have to assume one of them win, and we have to play to win when we're in a war and they're on the other side.
Right. So that's on that note, on the note of rigging, let's go from the top of the spectrum rigging to the bottom of the spectrum rigging with our next story about Dollar General. Okay. There's a video that will be linked in the PDF that comes with the show notes at the end. But the video is a little bit long, and I chopped it into two segments about how Dollar General is it's built on a model of fraud and it's ripping people off. So the two segments are one, the consumer describing the ripoff, and two, an attorney describing. Let's start with segment one. Here we go.
Their price of my kitty litter was $8.95. Great. I purchase it all the time. I didn't pay attention. I go up there, I check out, I leave. Well, one day, wait a minute, $10? I noticed it. I asked him about it. Oh, no, they've raised the price. Well, that doesn't say it on the shelf. Well, they just have to change it. It's in the computer. It's not on the shelf. Next week, go in and buy cat litter. Same thing. That is not what the price says on the shelf.
Okay, so you get the thing. They put up one price, they put up the low price, and then you get into the line and you check your receipt hours later, maybe never, and you paid a much higher price.
Right.
As it turns out. Okay, that's the first part of the scam. And then she brings it to an attorney, and then we learn about this.
After months of repeatedly being overcharged by Dollar General, Lori wrote a letter to the Oklahoma Attorney General.
And within 2 days, I got a response that they forwarded the letter. Great. They responded back, Dollar General did, and they apologized, and they said, we'll have a gift card for you. I said, okay, well, let me just ask, how much is it for? $10. Tell her to keep it. I don't want it. It was insulting.
Lori's story was brought to attorney Mark Dan, where it became the basis for one of three class action lawsuits in Oklahoma, New York, and New Jersey.
I don't think there's any question that Dollar General is doing this intentionally and systematically.
June 22nd, I was overcharged 4 items out of 11. $7.95 was advertised $6.50.
If you tell me one thing and then charge me something else, in almost every jurisdiction in America, that would be theft by deception.
Okay, so there's class action lawsuits going on behalf of private plaintiffs. Separately, and maybe the video mentions it, maybe it doesn't, I'll just tell you, there are state-oriented lawsuits where state attorneys general, including the one in Ohio, bring lawsuits against Dollar General, too. But the attorney's right. This is systematic corruption and systematic theft and crime by a major company.
Right, and I would argue that this comes down to AI pricing. So if you want to know
explain that. Yeah, how's that work?
If you want to know how these kinds of systems are engineered, they're using algorithms and they're using software and they're probably using AI. And what they're doing is saying, okay, first of all, we're going to attract you with one price and then we're going to charge you another price. And we're going to do it in a way that you probably won't figure out. But if you do figure out, then we're going to make it so difficult and hard for you to do anything about it. We're going to calculate. Now, I don't know about Dollar General, but the companies I've been dealing with, I think they have algorithms that say, you, John Titus, believe your time is worth X dollars per hour. And if we can engineer it so that you doing something about it will take 5 hours instead of 5 minutes. And we calculate your time. You think your time is worth this much. It means we can pad the bills before, during, and after a service. And you can't afford to do anything about it because your time is worth too much. So we're going to figure out how much we can skim each individual consumer. So I've had experiences with hotels and car rental companies where before, during, and after, their services are different than advertised. Their prices are different than advertised. They pad the bills, from the time you pay for the service to the time you pick up the car. They've padded the bill several times. Then they pad the bill when you return the car. Of course, you made the mistake of giving them your credit card. You're not paying cash. But they've also changed the service. So, for example, doctors tell me, You know, many doctors now tell their clients, you're responsible for the bill. We will put the charge into the insurance company. We will get the insurance company to approve the procedure. We'll put the bill in for the procedure. But if they don't pay, you're responsible. And I have doctors saying, you know, for procedures that have been approved by the insurance company that they're putting the bill in, they're getting 25% are being paid. And 75% yeah. you have to go back to the patient. And right. the patient is saying, wait a minute, I have insurance. And the doctor is saying, no, you don't. You have pretend insurance, not real insurance.
Let me tell you about one I just experienced. I have a friend who's an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker. He got a hold of me recently. You mentioned Enterprise. He'd rented a car. They come back to him and they say, hey, you know, you dropped off your car. This is a week after he dropped off his car. As it turns out, there was a dent in it. And, you know, so notify your insurance company. You owe us $2,500 for the damage. So he got a hold of me and I said, okay, here's the scam. And I sent him a draft email. I said, send him this. This will get him off your back. But the calculation was this guy is so busy and he right. is super busy. He'll never track that down. So right. he reached out to me and that's how he handled it. But I think right. that was a total calculation. It's complete fraud. He didn't damage that car at all. I was with him.
Right. But I think they calculated his time is worth X, or he thinks his time is worth X. And here's how much we can skim, and it won't be worth his time to fight it, right?
And yeah, absolutely.
And the beauty of how they do it, they set it up so the employees have no. Not only do they not understand the charges, and not only can they not explain the charges, but they don't have the power to change the charges. So they have no knowledge. They have complete deniability, and you have to call a third party to get an explanation. And don't think it won't take 5 hours waiting on a, you know, a robocall to get through.
Right. And then you get through to somebody with a heavy Indian accent. It's going to take a long time.
Well, but
you laugh. It's true.
What we're watching is businesses price to attract you in, and they're pricing yeah. your cost, and then they make all their money on the financial fraud.
Yeah.
And so, so we have business after business systematically adopting a model of financial fraud. It's right. extraordinary.
Right. And this started in 2012 when the banks were given a free pass on crimes that they would admit to. They would cop police like yeah, we definitely committed the crime, meaning that there had to have been individuals in the mix committing crimes. It's legally impossible for a corporation to commit a crime without individuals, actually high ranking individuals committing crimes in those organizations. Yet no one was going to jail. And that's when I got on the train and said, this is a really bad precedent. You're slitting your own throat. This right. is going to spread outward. And here we are with a systemic countrywide notion where you have this sort of informal system where big companies are being encouraged to commit crimes willy-nilly and they're getting away with it.
In my experience, this is approved top-down.
Absolutely right. Me too.
When you have companies adopt a criminal business model, they've been told that they can do this.
The DOJ has green-lighted this, period, full stop.
The DOJ has green-lighted this, and it is set up so that whatever government fines are charged, like we've seen in J.P. Morgan Chase, the civil and criminal money penalties are far less than the total profits. So it's a business model. It is a
Absolutely.
Criminal business model.
They're right. going to pay those fines with proceeds from future crimes.
Right. And so what does this mean to you as a consumer? What it means is you need to be able to identify, you know, which companies have a criminal business model and which don't. And you have to assume if it's a large company, it has a criminal business model unless you can prove to yourself otherwise. So
I would think that's very sound advice.
Right. So you need to think through all the places you shop, all the places you do business, and you need to be prepared either to only purchase or shop with people who are honest, or when you have to depend on one that's not, you have to be ready tactically to engage in warfare.
Yeah.
You have to keep a list as you look on the shelf what the price is, or look at the item what the price is. You have to keep a list so that on checkout you make sure you get that price. So you need to understand you're in a war, and the war is, you know, sort of multivariate. And you need to be prepared to play to win. And you cannot assume good faith on the part of any large company unless you've right. proactively done due diligence and assumed, you know, or proven to yourself that you can trust them.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And be willing to go to the mat over 10 cents.
Yep. Absolutely. And yeah. And part of it is, this is a, I don't know how to describe this. This is, it's not just about the 10 cents. It's about.
Right. That's not exactly, it's not the money, it's the principle.
Right. You can't.
You're not running a game on me in a grocery store.
Right. It's funny, when I was an investment advisor, I used to tell clients, they'd say, well, wait a minute, I can settle this litigation for $100,000 and it's cheaper, you know, I'll spend $200,000, you know, on legal. I said, no, you know, even if you have to spend $500,000, nuke them and make it clear to everyone that you are, you know, you are the last guy anybody wants to have a fight.
You know who had that? You know who had that philosophy legally in my experience?
You.
J&J.
Oh, J&J? They just... Oh,
they'd go to war over $100.
Right.
They'd spend $10 million on attorney's fees over $100. Just so you're not going to nick them. You're not going to be a notch in their belt. Or they're not going to be a notch in your belt. Absolutely no way.
I don't know. You know, I've been told that there are people in the bureaucracy who when it was suggested that they come after me again, they're like, no, not her. Never again.
Yeah, right. Wrong one.
Right. Never wrong again. One. Right.
Yep.
Right.
Okay. Let's anyway. Keep it going. I'm interested in your take on the next story. This is interesting. Investors pour money into U.S. corporate bond funds at record rate. This turns out is to be a bet that people are making, investors are making. A record amount of money has flooded into the U.S. corporate bond markets this year as investors rush to lock in the highest yields in years. And here's the bet, ahead of an anticipated series of interest rate cuts by the Federal Reserve. Most of the money has gone into investment-grade vehicles, pushing spreads to two-year lows. Despite spreads being at such low levels, some investors remain concerned, here's the downside of that bet, about the health of the world's biggest economy and the potential for deepening corporate distress or a rise in defaults, particularly if the Fed does not deliver the interest rate cuts the market is expecting. Okay, so what kind of money are we talking about here? Investment-grade companies alone have issued issued a record $561 billion in dollar-denominated bonds year-to-date, according to data from a third-party provider, the largest volume seen since at least 1990. But get this, out of that $561 billion, high-yield issuance has also accelerated, rising 64% year-on-year to $62 billion, the highest total in 3 years. So you got to wonder... You know, if you're a buyer of the bonds, that they get those great rates that the people are issuing at high rates, you're doing well. But what about the companies that issue those bonds? They're going to get hurt bad if those interest rates don't come through, interest rate increases don't come through.
Well, if
and
you
I don't,
look,
and here's the thing, I don't think they're coming through. I think this is a big head fake.
Right. So I'm not a believer that their interest rates coming through. The target rate the Fed said was 4%. For this year, you know, we're above that, and the Fed will do whatever they have to do to play to win on the global stage.
Absolutely right.
And if you look at the percentage chance that they're going to have to play hardball in the debt trap, which is what they're doing now, but to keep interest rates up to do that, the chances are too high. So, but that doesn't mean don't lock in the yields, because I think locking in.
Yeah,
good
on the
yields.
Investment side, you're right. Yeah, the good yields are good yields.
Yeah, locking in good yields makes sense, but you have to be ruthless about credit quality. And what where you're going to make a mistake is if you lock in yields and you don't get the right credit quality, you could find yourself, you know, in real trouble. So
the Fed's one of the Fed's top games is jawboning.
Right.
Fed does this all. The Fed is on record as saying, look, the minutes of the Fed, they're not really minutes. They're just a marketing tool to sort of massage market perception. There's propaganda. Okay. So all this notion about the Fed's going to do this, that's all jawboning. That's all massaging expectations and getting people to do what they want without them actually doing it.
Right. Now here's the problem. If you look at the fixed income market, you have a couple of problems. One is you have far more paper than you have real assets behind it. Okay. And you could get real assets behind it if the economy could be run to optimize productivity. But when there's no rule of law, what happens? Productivity is destroyed, right?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're shrinking the pie when, in fact, you need to expand the pie to carry the paper you have. So that's problem number one. Problem number two, the biggest question mark is the U.S. Treasury. So the U.S. Treasury, the issuance is unsustainable, and it is simply a military question of whether it can sustain it, right? Because we are now down to the value of the dollar being the military question, right?
We're coming to that point, yes. Yes, right. You are right, about that, yes.
Right, and all the intelligence I need to make really savvy decisions about the military question depends on all sorts of secret information that I can only guess. I don't have access to, right?
Right. Yes.
Right. And it's sort of who's got the satellites, who controls the sea lanes, and who's got the invisible weaponry to win at this game.
Well, how about the visible weaponry called hypersonic missiles? Because there the score is Russia's got them and we don't.
Right. And there's every indication that the military question is looking a lot shakier than it did 5 years ago.
Yeah.
So back to the bond market, do I want to stay in treasuries or do I want to get into good municipals or corporate bonds?
If you're asking me, I would be in good municipals.
Okay. So here's the problem. The municipal market is tiny compared to the treasury market. Where is all this money going to go? Now, where this money's been going for 10 years is they're trying to get out of the treasuries, is it's been going to the stock market. It's one of the reasons pushing up the stock market.
Right.
But now, you're saying, okay, well, let me get into good municipals or let me get into good corporates.
Good corporate, right.
Right. I mean, I would rather have a railroad than the U.S. Treasury, right? Because the railroads... You know, the good railroads are going to, people want food and food's going to get from here to there. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel more confident in a good railroad than I feel in the U.S. government. So
that's not saying a lot, but, okay,
no, it's not saying a lot. But all I'm saying is credit quality. Don't get tricked out of good credit quality. You have to and you can't depend on the rating agencies. You have to say, is this organization, do they have an essential service or product that means they're going to be around in 20 years? That's it.
Right. Well, Warren Buffett agrees with you on railroads, or at least certain. He's like in one of them. Can't remember which one.
No, I'm a big believer in railroads.
So. Yeah. Okay, let's shift gears to space, military, and global turf wars. But the theme really continues with U.S. arrogance and hubris. It's incredible. Niger's junta cancels military agreement with the United States. On March 16th, the military junta in Niger, which took power amid mass protests against French military presence last July, unilaterally canceled a military agreement signed last year, allowing U.S. military personnel and contractors to operate in the country now after the French withdrawal last year. About 1,100 U.S. military personnel are to leave Niger. The junta spokesman, Colonel Major Amadou Abdramane, that's the spokesman here. The announcement of the military follows an unannounced meeting in Nigerian capital on March 12 through 14 between Nigerian officials and a high-level U.S. delegation led by U.S. Secretary of State of African Affairs, Mali Fee. Abdramane accused the U.S. delegation, get this, of being disrespectful and disrespecting diplomatic procedures. He stated that Niamey, the capital, was not informed of the details of the U.S. delegation, the date of their arrival, or the agenda. Abdramane added, "The government of Niger forcefully denounces the condescending attitude accompanied by the threat of retaliation from the head of the American delegation towards the Nigerian government and people." So there you go. America throwing a weight around. But look at the consequences of this farther on down the story. What's going to go on here? That same month, a delegation led by Russian Deputy Defense Minister Colonel Yekarov was received by Tiani, the head of the Nigerian junta. At the end of this meeting, both countries agreed to the signing of documents as part of the strengthening of military cooperation between Niger and Russia, Nigerian authorities reported. So thanks for being arrogant. Now get out. We've got our own deal with Russia. See ya. Wouldn't want to be ya. Well, hey, well done, U.S.
We shed those status polls in Africa, and how popular Russia was compared to the U.S.-American alliance. I mean, the Anglo-American alliance.
Right.
So UK least popular, but U.S. very low and Russians very, very high. And, you know, we just saw that 20-year agreement between Iran and Russia. We have countries around the world making long-term agreements with the Russians. And part of that is they believe they keep their word.
Well, it's not only that. It's like, well, we know they're not going to come in with an unannounced meeting at which they level these threats at us. Russia's not going to do that.
It comes back to what Mattis said when he was confirmed as Secretary of Defense under Trump. He said the strength of the dollar is overly reliant on the U.S. military, on force. So what I, you know, when you look at this story, you look at the, you know, we just had the president of Guyana tell a BBC correspondent off and basically say,
yeah,
you know, you're paid by the people who are destroying the environment. We here are helping the environment and we're sick of your hypocrisy. And basically, it's the same pushback I'm seeing all across the United States. It's the sane who are sick of the insane and they've had it. And they feel comfortable with pushing back. And part of it could be that the Russians and the Chinese are changing the military, you know, the military state of play. But
yeah,
the pushback is global, and it's the same for the people in America pushing back against immigration, you know, as the people in Africa. This
right.
is not the Africans pushing back against the United States. This is the sane pushing back against the insane, and it's happening all around the world.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It's the,
right.
it's the sane pushing against the insane. Because
right.
to come in and do that is totally insane. Expect to get your way. An unannounced meeting where you come in to level threats. And they're
right.
just like, well, get out then. Don't let
right.
the door hit your ass on the way out. We'll see you.
Right.
Get out. Out.
Right. Right.
You know, people are pushing back. Good for them. Okay, let's
right.
keep it going in space, military, and global turf wars. Speaking of more insanity, the powers that be are not going to let Ukraine go. So what are they going to do? They're going to go elsewhere. Romania to host largest NATO military base in Europe. Oh, joy. Covering an area of almost 3,000 hectares, which, by the way, is about 11 and a half square miles. So not that big. The base will be the largest in Europe. Ramstein in Germany covers about 2,000 hectares. In recent years, Romania has invested massively in defense. For 2024, the army will have a budget of 20 billion euros. According to data made public, including the amount spent in 2023, over 5 years that run up through 2027, Romania will invest almost 320 billion lei in the military, or about 65 billion euros. So the military, the U.S. military is going, the Western military is going where the money is.
Right.
So they're going to spend all the money. They're going to buy your weapons. They're going to buy all this other stuff. That's where the military is going to go. But they're not letting the loss of Ukraine go. They're just going to move to another front.
So let's step back, because there's a parallel process going on. We saw in the National Defense Authorization huge money pouring into biodefense. We see biowarfare labs all around the world. A lot of indications that they're probably, you know, they've been being used in what's called asymmetrical warfare. We have the WHO desperately trying to get the WHO treaty, which would give, in theory, jurisdiction to drop anywhere in the world and take control of places. And we know we have investors all around the world being promised or financing big new vaccine manufacturing capability. And they're being told that there's a lot of money to be made at this because of biowarfare. Okay.
Yeah.
So we have a series of money pouring in, private and public money, into playing a biodefense game, which is one way to control. And my concern watching all of this, since there's clearly no ability for NATO to win a ground war, Are they planning once they get the WHO treaty to play a major biodefense game?
I don't know. Gotta chew on that one. Wow.
Right. Right. And that the problem with that game is it's hard to control and it could happen anywhere, including in the US. I mean, one of the reasons I'm so adamant about doing everything we can to stop the WHO treaty is I think they will play that game in the United States.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Right.
I think Dollar General underscores that fact.
Right. Well, here's the thing. And back to our discussion of the Biden team and the Trump team, one of the questions you want to ask is which one will play that game domestically in the United States to get their way?
As if only one of them would.
There you go. There you go. Really? Before you pledge fealty to a candidate, you need to understand, you know, what's their position on mass atrocity of you.
Yeah, right. What's your position on mass atrocity that includes myself, Mr. President?
I'm telling you, get ready for a spiritual faith walk.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
You got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's turn to Hey Robot. We have a few stories this week. Again, you know, but thematically consistent with what we've seen before. Let's start with Wells Fargo. That's what they're doing. Wells Fargo abruptly terminating customers' bank accounts, say attorneys general in 16 states, demanding immediate freeze on lenders' alleged debanking practice. In a letter addressed to Wells Fargo CEO Charles Scharf, 16 Republican AGs across the country accused a trillion-dollar lender of debanking customers in a political and discriminatory manner. Here's the letter. They're saying Wells Fargo's decision to debank Republican candidates and gun industry participants reveal a new trend that's very troubling. Which types of companies or people will Wells Fargo determine cannot be allowed as customers? Is this why Wells apparently closed the accounts of former Republican candidates Lauren Witzke and Pete somebody on the same day in 2021? The AG say the pattern may be in violation of state laws. It's undoubtedly in violation of state laws. There's no question about that. The letter asks Wells Fargo to stop its debanking policies and respond to its concerns by April 4th. So this story is not over. We're right in the middle of it right now. But that's what Wells Fargo is doing. This is the danger. This is right there of digital money. This is the weak point.
Right. We see great pushback by the attorney generals, particularly the Republican attorney generals. The next step, though, is going to be will state pull licenses? In other words, Wells Fargo cannot operate in a state unless it has, you know, it has a license from the state to operate within that state. The states have jurisdiction.
They have to have a few licenses. They have to have a license from the FDIC. They have to have a license from the Comptroller of the Currency. They have to have state licenses. Yeah, they're violating the law
right.
For sure.
Right. But if they're violating the law, the legislature, you know, or the executive administration has the ability to pull their license. And that's a very radical thing for a state to do, given, you know, sort of practices in the United States for years. But we're coming to a point where if someone like a Dollar General is going to adopt and have a systemic criminal model which consistently violates the law, the question is: Are you gonna pull their license to operate? The states can do that.
They can, but they won't. These banks are too big. They're monsters now. See, they're the Frankenstein. It's not going to be reined in. Sorry.
I have not yet given up hope.
Okay.
You know, here's the thing. You have the Constitution and you have the central banking money buying people out of the Constitution. And every person in America is going to have to make a decision. Do you want the money or do you want the law? Which is it? And
right.
If you look at the choice, it's an individual
US has,
choice.
Has voted. It sat on its couch and voted in favor of Cheetos and more crime.
So for my entire lifetime, the American people have voted for the money and against the law. Not everybody,
right?
But the majority.
Right.
And now we are in a process of depopulation where the more we choose the money, the more we're going to be depopulated. And so
exactly.
The question is, will there be a shift where the sane can say enough? And I don't know the answer, but I'm going to continue to work with the sane on shifting it from money to the rule of law. That's what I do. And
a big part of that rule of law is holding politicians' feet to the fire and saying, listen, you got to do something about this and rein in Frankenstein.
So I see everywhere I go, wonderful state legislators who are doing just that.
We'll get to one of those in a minute.
Okay. They are working their hearts out and have for years.
Yeah,
you know, they have worked for decades or more. And I'm, you know, my question to everybody else is, you know, support the good. Your best shot is supporting those people. They are out there. They're working their butts off. They are doing everything they can. Where the, you know, are we going to support them or not? This is our shot.
Okay. Let's keep it going with this next. This next story is just, it's so part and parcel of what's going on. It's a perfect follow-up to the Wells Fargo story. This is Swift. Swift planning launch of new central bank digital currency platform in 2 to 3 years. Okay. Global bank messaging. Okay. Let me back up. Swift is a messaging network.
Right.
The reason Swift exists is that the bank A doesn't work like bank B. And if you're going to transfer the money between the two, you need human involvement somewhere to say, okay, which column do I put it in on that particular spreadsheet? It's a messaging system. That's it. That's what Swift
is. Right. You confirm we sent you 1,000 to go here. And so it's communication that supports the financial transfers.
Right. But you need, it's instructions on which lever to pull and which dial to move. Okay. That's all it is. It's not pipes. It's not plumbing. It's instructions on how to operate plumbing. Okay. Global bank messaging network Swift is planning a new platform in the next 1 to 2 years to connect the wave of central bank digital currencies now in development to existing finance system. It has told Reuters. Swift's main advantage, though, it has its big claim to fame is has an existing network. It's in over 200 countries and connects more than 11,500 banks and funds who use it to send trillions of dollars every day. Get this. The firm has gone from being virtually unknown outside banking circles to a household name since 2022 when it cut most of Russia's banks off from its network as part of the West sanctions for the invasion of Ukraine. So its claim to fame is, we can cut your money off. Isn't that great? We cut Russia's money off. Well, come to us, guys. We'll play ball. We'll cut people off willy-nilly.
You know, I have to say, the more Russia gets cut off, the stronger it makes its financial system. You know, if you didn't know better, you think everybody was trying to help the Russians build. You know, if only we could get more people to cut Tennessee off, we could build a much stronger moat here, if so to speak.
Yep. Yeah. I found that just so hilarious that Swift is pointing to its own criminality. It's like, well, come to us. We're the one you want to come to. You know, because we play ball with the criminals.
Well, in the world of the insane, lawlessness is virtue, right?
It is. Absolutely. Okay. This next story is a follow up to a story we covered last year, I think in August of 2023. But this is sort of the cherry on top. SEC attorneys acted in bad faith in Utah crypto firm's fraud case judge rules. Let's go to the second part of the story first, because this is where it kind of started. This is what we covered last time. They're saying, you know, defendants are closing accounts, okay? So the attorneys for the SEC say, they tell the judge, in the last 48 hours, defendants, this crypto firm, have closed additional bank accounts. And I believe, says the SEC attorney, the number, I don't have it in front of me, I think they've closed around 33 bank accounts in the last 48 hours. That particular revelation to the judge was the most significant evidence in that case that DebtBox associates were trying to evade authority and hide funds, Judge Shelby said. And it was enough to convince the judge to issue the restraining orders. However, he says back in July, not only were no accounts closed in the 48 hours before the hearing, no accounts were closed in all of July of 2023, Shelby wrote in his sanction order that we covered last year. Now we come to the current case. What's going on here? What's different? Shelby ruled the attorneys for the federal financial watchdog presented misleading evidence to obtain the restraining order and failed to correct the record when given the chance, which we already knew. The SEC's lawyer's conduct, Shelby wrote, constitutes a gross abuse of power entrusted to it by Congress and substantially undermine the integrity of these proceedings and the judicial process. So that's kind of new, but here we come to the punchline. Shelby called the SEC's conduct troubling and said attorneys acted in bad faith, which is weird for a judge to say. That's pretty harsh. The federal agency will now have to pay DebtBox and co-defendants attorney's fees. Okay. And any other legal costs associated with temporary restraining order and asset freeze. So the SEC has to pay the defendant's attorney's fees. That's a huge deal. Fee shifting in the U.S. is very rare. It means you've engaged in really really bad in litigation misconduct.
Well, but for a judge to openly state that the government attorney, I mean, judges almost always side with the government. You know, they always give the government the benefit of the doubt, Mike.
They almost always, even when there's misconduct, they find another way to rule with the party that isn't guilty of the misconduct.
Right. They don't want to pick a fight with the government. And so for a judge to write that the government attorneys acted in bad faith is, in my experience, is extraordinary.
It's extraordinary. And then fee shift on top of that.
Right.
Unheard of.
Right. So now I just saw Rolf Hazelhurst just filed a lawsuit against claiming misdeeds by the and bad faith by the Department of Justice. And if you look at what's been reported about what they did, it's the same. You know, it's attorneys rigging false evidence. I mean, it's just, you know, he's got them nailed 8 ways to Sunday.
Wow.
Who knows what the judges do, but it's extraordinary. So the witness, the DOJ had a witness who they were using as an expert witness to say that vaccines don't cause autism. The witness changed his opinion and said vaccines do cause autism. So they dropped the witness and they kept his old testimony and they present it in a way that makes it look like he's saying that vaccines don't cause autism. And essentially, Rolf was able to find out that he changed his testimony and that they had literally used prior information to misrepresent his testimony.
Wow.
And it was engineered. I mean, he caught them. If the report is accurate, he caught them just 10 ways. He nailed them. It's just a flat out fraud. And they knew exactly what they're doing because they had to work hard to do it.
Yeah.
And it's extraordinary. Right. And especially extraordinary because the discussion of do vaccines cause autism is such a sensitive and important one. And Rolf has an autistic child. So this is going to be, I don't know. You know, I saw criminal behavior by Department of Justice attorneys steadily and regularly. And you know, I saw them, you know, criminally rig false evidence and just behave in fraudulent ways. And I was told at the time, you know, this is many years ago, 98, 99, 2000, there's nothing you can do. At the same time, it's 24 years later, I think government attorneys have been told that their job is to get somebody and they don't have to obey the law.
I think that's right. Yep.
Right.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But
fortunately, you got 850 members of the judiciary, some of whom don't agree with that approach, evidently.
Well, I'm coming back. I think the sane are pushing back. And I think this is a perfect example. Mm-hmm. The sane have had it. And it's hard for most judges to believe that it's really that bad. But once they get it, I'm telling you, I'm very encouraged about the pushback.
I think it's also an example of, and it's one of two examples in this episode, of the wisdom of the founders in Article 3, lifetime appointments of judges, and making judiciary truly independent to be able to push back against nonsense like this. The other example being the division of power, the federalism model, the division of power between states and the federal government, because the significant pushback is also coming from the states. Also, reflecting the wisdom of the founders.
What I'm seeing this year is an absolute turn by state legislators. So talking to people around the country, to state legislators, the state legislators who were trying to push back against the WHO, last year, people were saying, what are you talking about? You know, there was no understanding of how nefarious the agenda was. Now we see it was 36 or 37 to nothing in Louisiana. The state senators, you know, passing a resolution against the WEF, the WHO, the UN. And what that tells me is people are starting to say, oh, it really is this bad, and we're going to push back.
Yeah.
So I just think that, you know, the game is afoot. It's just started.
It's big time afoot. And let's go to Farmageddon to see how far afoot the game really is. This next headline is really shocking. World's population expected to fall for first time since the Black Death. This is according to a study in the Lancet Medical Journal. According to the study, By 2050, three quarters of the countries across the world will be below replacement rate, meaning they cannot sustain their population size. By 2100, that is estimated to increase to 97%. This means the population could begin falling within just decades, the first time it will have done so since the Black Death, an epidemic of bubonic plague in the 1300s. Now, personally, I think this story is part of like predictive programming to get people adjusted to the idea of people are going to start dying off.
Right. Well, it's interesting. Part of the Russia strategy was a belief that Russia was facing these kind of demographics, and that would give power to the West, because West was going to constantly replenish their populations with immigration. And so we would face very different we would face very different demographics than the Russians.
Yeah, well, we're not, so.
Okay. We'll see.
Let's go to pushback, and we're going to come up against the aforementioned state legislator. This first story is magnificent. It's from Business Insider, which is very skeptical. They're very anti-conspiracy theory, anti-states' rights, and all that. GOP politicians like Ron DeSantis are trying to ban lab-grown meat. Oh, the horrors. Comparing it to bugs and claiming threats to ranches. I'm going to have to switch views really quick because the blockage here. Okay, so let's get into this. Business Insider doesn't like the idea of a banning synthetic meat. Synthetic meat is good. Republican politicians in some states have a new target, meat raised in a lab instead of via animals. Seven states have considered bills so far in 2024 that would prohibit the distribution or sale of lab-grown meat. Oh, tell us more. Some of the legislation says that lab-grown meat, also known as cultured meat, threatens states' current agricultural economies. So that's one complaint. How about another complaint? Other legislators have made more opaque attacks on lab-grown meat. Tennessee State Representative Bud Hulsey said at a hearing in March that proponents of lab-grown meat, quote, would probably like to eat bugs with Bill Gates, end quote, according to the Times. Lab-grown meat relies on cells from commonly consumed animals in the U.S., such as chicken, beef, and fish. So the Business Insider is making, they think this is really funny that he would say, you know, something foolish like that. But actually, I happen to agree with Bud.
So I would like to point out Bud Halsey. Bud Halsey was Hero of the Year with Senator Frank Nicely on the Salieri Report. And Bud Halsey is one of the great freedom fighters of Tennessee.
Yeah.
Bud Halsey. You know, I haven't known a lot of great men in my life, but Bud Halsey and Frank Nicely are two of them. So they're extraordinary.
I love that quote. They probably want to eat bugs with Bill Gates. So the business insider thinks that's risible, but actually, I think most Americans agree with him. Like, yeah, I don't want to eat bugs with Bill Gates.
Well,
I don't want to eat synthetic meats. Disgusting.
Right. The war over sort of the state's involvement with food is one, keeping it out wholesale, but the other is getting it properly labeled. Because when you go in the grocery store, you know, there's a lot of effort to label this in a way that you don't understand. This is not real meat.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And the transparency is not on the menu. Nope.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Let's keep it going with another story of this is take two on mocking the sensible position. But this one blows up in the publication's face within the four corners of the article. This is from Super News. ESG and divestment campaign impacts BlackRock with $13.3 billion in withdrawals. Okay. Approximately $13.3 billion has been withdrawn from the asset manager. And here's where they diminish and they try to ridicule this amount. This sum represents a minor fraction, about 0.1% of BlackRock's $10 trillion in assets. So nothing to worry about there at all. It's about trivial. The largest single withdrawal came from the Texas Permanent School Fund, which announced it would pull $8.5 billion by the end of April. This move has been part of a broader Republican-led initiative against the use of ESG factors in investment decisions. BlackRock has responded to these challenges by increasing its political lobbying and engaging in PR, such as co-hosting Power Grid Investment Summit in Houston with Lieutenant Governor. But here's we come to the punchline. This campaign has also led to a reevaluation of participant in climate-focused industry alliances. BlackRock has scaled back its commitment to Climate Action 100+, while other firms such as State Street, JP Morgan Asset Management, and PIMCO and Invesco withdrew altogether. So despite the fact that 0.1%, it has enough of an impact to get them to back off of this. How about that? So it's not so funny, is it, that small amount?
So many states and their pension funds have gone to a practice of outsourcing their money management to basically firms, you know, up on the East Coast.
Yeah.
What, you know, so it's BlackRock, it's Vanguard. It's if I'm a governor of a state or I'm a treasurer, one of the things I would look at seriously is creating in-house capacity to manage money. Because, you know, the state pension funds, the state rainy day reserves, these are precious assets. And if you are investing them in a way that puts a lot of money in the insane, who is then doing things to destroy your tax base, you are not getting the best investment result. It
right.
does not serve the beneficiaries of state pension funds to have the tax base destroyed. I can't tell you how many pension funds I open up the portfolio. They are pouring money into leverage buyout and private equity firms that are basically coming in and you know, playing the games we're talking about with Dollar General or some of these car rental or, you know, or literally just liquidating companies and making money in a way that destroys the tax base, you know, or plays the pandemic game where you shut down Main Street. I drove into my county 2 days ago, John, and just by driving through at night, I was able to see very, very clearly all the roads empty, which buildings were empty and where the businesses had shut down and which still had operating small business. I would say the independent small business income, you know, in the county seat in my county is less than 50% of what it was in February 2020.
Wow.
It looks like a, you know, a nuclear war has hit. And if you look at our pension funds, we are financing that destruction of our tax base. And make no mistake about it. Small businesses are not going out of business because they're less economic and efficient. You know, when technology makes Amazon more competitive, they are right. going out of business because of extraordinary rigging of the cost of capital and yeah. regulatory rules that are advantaging people who are not economic.
Right.
So, you know, if I'm a state treasurer or a state governor, it's time to take a serious look at, should I create capacity to manage our funds properly, because they are not being properly invested. They're not yeah. being invested in the best interest of the beneficiaries. And certainly yeah,
do you think that $236 billion of malinvestment under the last year is going to prop up economically uneconomic actors? Of course it is. I see it all the time. That's right. What's propping them up.
Right.
Because it's not their own merit that's propping them up. They run in ridiculous businesses that sell useless products and nobody is buying.
Right.
How are they remaining open?
Right.
Somebody's propping them up somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You're exactly right. Yep. Okay. Let's turn to our last story in Pushback. This is a pretty good one. This is one where you just kind of take your wins where you can get them. From the 10th Amendment Center, signed as law, Utah puts limits on warrantless biometric surveillance. The new law prohibits government entities, including law enforcement agencies, from obtaining biometric surveillance information without a warrant, and a publicly available written policy outlining the agency's use of such biometric surveillance. Biometric surveillance is defined as, quote, the analysis of surveillance information using biometric software to identify an individual's identity or location using the individual's physical attributes or manner. Okay, that's good insofar as it goes. Includes iris scans, voice recognition, heart rate scanners, software that analyzes a person's gait or distinctive movements. However, it explicitly excludes facial recognition from the definition. Also, it allows biometric surveillance on authorized property, including police stations, correction facilities, elementary and secondary schools, courthouses, airports, and other critical infrastructure. So it's a limited win, but it's a win. We'll take it where we can get it, like I said.
Right.
Yeah.
I just interviewed Darren Moore, and he said his number one goal for...
Explain who Darren Moore is. Remind the subscribers.
Right. So Darren Moore is a crypto investor who's very, very knowledgeable about digital currencies and digital money. And I asked Darren, what, and this is in the shorty that's up on the interview. You know, if you could ask the state legislators to do anything, what would it do? And he said, privacy. You know, anything we can do to make digital systems private, we need to do. And that would make a huge difference, including rolling back the Bank Secrecy Act. Now, I have not grappled with how a state could roll back the Bank Secrecy Act because it's a federal act. But, you know, clearly he described the extent to which private crypto investors are getting thrown out of the banks because they trade crypto, which, you know, to me is not acceptable.
So. Right. Exactly. I may not be an investor in crypto.
Right.
But I'm damn sure behind the right of people to invest it if that's what they want to do.
Exactly. Right.
Without interference.
Yeah. So the interview was about the future of digital freedom.
Yeah.
And we need for a healthy financial system, you need digital systems and you need analog systems. And we have to bring integrity to the digital systems if we're going to use them.
Yep. Absolutely.
And the question is, how do we do that?
Darren's a good guy. I've interviewed with him. He's interviewed me twice on his channel. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've gotten a lot of recommendations to interview him, but the test was, what does John Titus think? So we went forward.
He's a good guy. Yeah.
He is a good guy.
Okay. Let's move to charts. We got some good ones this week. Let's start with the US dollar index from the going direct reset. Here we go.
So the going direct reset's working. What do you want me to tell you?
Yeah.
You know, I don't like that, but we dropped off a little bit yesterday, but the US dollar, and here's the thing, it's back to interest rates. Powell's got everybody in a debt trap. And unfortunately,
yes.
The US government is one of the ones in that debt trap.
Indeed it is.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Next up, 10-year treasury, same thing. Wow.
Yeah. So remember their goal was 4%? So, you know, they got to 4% and now we're headed back up. So, you know, if you look at the long-term trend, it certainly looks like the trend is up. And I would not bet the ranch that rates are coming down at all. So if I'm Powell
I wouldn't bet the ranch either way.
Yeah. So if Powell's weapon is debt trap and the military question is threatened by hypersonic missiles, you know, this is the weapon they have that works. So
you got that right. Okay. Right. Next up, S&P, NASDAQ, and gold.
So gold is suddenly moving. And the question is why?
Look at that.
Yeah.
This is gold, a chart we never see where gold's on top of the usual suspects.
Yeah. And of course, this is just year to date. If we'd done a longer thing, it wouldn't be
understood, but right. it's not an insignificant time frame. It's not like you pick 3 weeks from Wednesday or some arbitrary thing.
Well, but here's the thing. So we have I can never pronounce the name.
NVIDIA.
NVIDIA. I have NVIDIA here, and the bloom is coming off the rose. If you look at how the market's performing, you have quote unquote the AI stocks. You know, you have a bifurcated market where the AI stocks are absolutely soaring and everything else is flat or down. And it's very, very bifurcated. And basically the message is the control grid wins. Well, suddenly the bloom is coming off the rose and gold is skyrocketing. Now, one of the things that's happening is Utah just passed its law to, you know, for gold and silver purchases. Tennessee is very close to passing its this year. We have the states lining up to do much more with gold and silver. So gold and silver may be on the move because it's clear, you know, both retail and the states that there's going to be more of a shift to gold. But, you know, it could also be people just looking around and saying, I'm afraid of the insane. You know, I'm going to get some central bank protection because that's your core position in gold and silver is just really central bank protection. That's all it is.
Yeah, right.
And from what I see driving around the country, inflation isn't slowing down.
Yeah. I think that's right. It's not slow. I don't see it slowing down anywhere.
Right.
I certainly don't see it in my bills. And I don't see it at the grocery store.
Right.
Okay, let's go to the last chart, which is also year to date. I don't know what happened to my chart title here, but it's gold, silver, and treasury.
Yeah.
And, so, but again, gold on top and treasury at the very bottom.
Yeah. So which would you rather on, treasuries or gold or silver?
Gold and silver, but right, that's true always.
Right. But I think there is what is happening right now, and it may or may not continue, but what is happening right now is there is a shift from the unreal to the real. So,
yeah, that's a great point. There's a shift from the unreal. The sane are pushing back and the real is pushing back.
The real is pushing back. And, you know, a lot of the AI run-up was spin. So I just think the real is looking more and more attractive. And I've told you for the last year, when it comes to the state legislatures, you know, there is an effort to focus them on the unreal, but the reality is the war is for the real. And the rape that is, you know, that a variety of players are engineering to happen is a land grab. In other words, how do we shut down your dollar liquidity and use that to grab your land? That is the disaster capitalism that's been played in Eastern Europe, in Russia, Latin America, and that's what we have to protect against. Richard Werner just joined me in Nashville yesterday and to explain the power and importance of financial transaction integrity, so that the state, the citizens, the banks can make transactions no matter what and can't be shut down by Washington or Wall Street. I don't know if you remember, the bankers shut down all transactions in Greece for over a month.
Yeah.
You know, I remember. And that's how they pick up your businesses and your assets, particularly your land cheap. And that's what we want to avoid. So it's the real is looking more and more attractive, and that's where the grab is coming.
Yeah. And let's go on that note to our last chart of the real pushing back against the unreal. And that is this, NVIDIA versus Coco. How about that?
Yeah. When status notices it, you know it's real.
Holy cow.
Now, guess who grows most of the cocoa in the world? Africa.
Is that right?
Yeah, Africa.
I never would have guessed that.
Yep. The majority of cocoa in the world is grown in Africa.
No kidding.
Huh. Yeah.
Okay. But that's an example. NVIDIA, just as a reminder, they're the chip manufacturers. There's NVIDIA chips in my machine. The graphic processing unit, I think, are pretty much NVIDIA chips. They got a huge market share, but they're they're the big infrastructure behind AI, I think.
Right. Exactly.
And really all of kind of virtual reality. They're a big player in that space.
Right. Although if you look at their revenues, the graphic and virtual reality is kind of flatlined, and the big is the analytics on the cloud and the AI.
Really?
So there's been a big shift in where their revenue is coming from, if you look at their, because it's exploded. And I suspect, John, I don't know this, but I suspect it's massive government contracts and subsidies to the big tech firms paying for the kind of analytics they want to play these games and control.
Yeah.
It's the control grid.
Yep, it is a control grid. But let's switch to Solari in-house and see what we have on deck this week.
Right. So this is the interview with Darren Moore, Digital Financial Freedom, Do Private Currencies Have a Future? And, you know, one of the big issues for crypto investors is, you know, what can the regulators do and what are they doing that could destroy, you know, that market or control that market in a very uncomfortable way? My number one concern is how do we ensure that digital financial systems can have freedom? You know, what I would love to see is digital financial systems that have integrity that can't be controlled, that are out of control. So I wanted to start having this conversation because we need analog systems that have integrity and digital systems that have integrity. And how do we get them? And if worst comes to worst, how do we survive with them if these guys try and roll out CBDC and we have to go outside the system?
Let me ask you this. Is a digital system that can't be invaded and controlled even real? Is it possible?
You know something? I'm not sure. And I'll tell you why. I have never, and this is a deep prejudice from many decades of experience, I have never seen Mr. Global roll out a technology that he couldn't, you know, subvert or control from behind the scenes. And that's why
I have my own doubts. Yes.
Right. So So you have to be very, very careful to understand when you're playing with digital. You know, worst case, he's got control. And I'll never forget, after, you know, I did that long due diligence on Bitcoin, and I heard again and again and again how impeccable the technology was. And then I flew to Baltimore and spent the afternoon in a diner, you know, a sort of great seating arrangement with Bill Binney, and talked through the whole issue with him. I saved all my top questions, you know, and what I learned is it ain't secure.
Right.
It's just not secure. And yet the majority of technologists I talked with, you know, they had no clue how things are really controlled and sabotaged and whatever. And Binney, of course, he understands not just the technology, but he understands the legal and financial games around the technology, and not just how technology is controlled, but how the people who manage the technology are controlled. You know, and so you have to understand the legal and financial games as well as the technology and how it works together. He was the top technical director at NSA, so he saw, you know, he ran the game.
Yeah.
So it was a mind-blowing conversation, and it affirmed once again, Mr. Global doesn't let this stuff out unless he's got,
right,
you know, he's got a way to control it.
You know, that's why the powers that be put such massive efforts into the backstories of people like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. These are just absurd comic book character stories of doing stuff in their basements. Like, hey, they're doing it from Langley or from Fort Meade or wherever you guys are.
It's major, major money. Major, major money.
Okay. Okay. Right. Let's keep it going. Food for the soul.
A wonderful, this is, I just got, came from Pennsylvania. Nina Hein flew in, and we're celebrating Women in Art, which is her book that we're publishing this year. And just a great time anyway. But she published a wonderful article on the, because it's the year of the dragon and dragon in art, and how in the Western culture, the dragon is sort of a representation of danger and evil, whereas in China and the Asian cultures, it's a much more, you know, a much more positive image. And she goes back and forth between the two and sort of describes the image of the dragon in art. It's fascinating.
That is fascinating.
Yeah,
that is fascinating. Okay, this, the search button.
Okay. We used to have a search engine that only did the homepage. And we went to a more advanced search engine that will do all the different domains, all the wrap-ups and the library and everything else in one search. And some people still prefer the old one. So at the search box, we've put up both. You can search just Solari, the homepage, or you can search all the domains, including all the wrap-up web presentations. We've also just launched the search engine for Ask Catherine. So you can go back, you can search all the PDFs and look at all the questions. We just started recently to timestamp the scripts so that if you want to jump to the audio and hear our answer on the recent scripts, it's easy to jump on the audio. On the older ones, it's going to, you know, it will take you more time to find the answer. But if you have a question for Ask Catherine and you want to check the historical, you know, because some questions we've answered maybe 1,000 times, but we're happy to answer it again.
Yeah, it's remarkable how hard it is to search a website. You find a, you get a website, you think it'd be easy to search it. It's not.
It's not. And having built this advanced search engine, so the advanced search engine will say, I only want it during this time period, or I only want, you know, so you can do much more custom service. But it also, if you're just searching the homepage and you want something quick and fast, some people prefer the first, so we put them both up.
Okay. Yeah, that's great. That's a big step forward. But let's turn to the meet and greet again in Idaho.
We had the most wonderful meet and greet in Oklahoma. There are three subscribers. They call themselves the Oklahoma Golden Girls. They've been living together for 20 years. Most beautiful house. I mean, just wonderful. And we had a marvelous group of people, and it was a great time. And I think the next one coming up is Idaho.
Yeah, so, it's Idaho, right.
and I'm really looking forward to this because it's Matt Hale.
Matt Hale,
who
right.
has been on the Salieri Report and I think Financial Rebellion before, is a wonderful attorney who defends consumers against some of the most horrible
the sharp practices. They call
this
them.
Is a man who knows all about lemons. Anyway, so I'm going to be up in Sandpoint. He moved from, you know, after the pandemic, he left Washington and moved to Idaho. Yeah, he's across the border now. Anyway, so Sandpoint, Idaho is great. I love Idaho is one of the most beautiful states in the country. And I had gone to all 49 states. I had not gone to all 50. Idaho was the last one. And I'll never forget crossing the border and thinking, I did it. I've basically driven to 48 states and visited all 50. And I crossed the border. It was so beautiful. It was spectacularly beautiful. So I'm looking forward to that.
That's awesome. That's
anyway,
great.
All the meet and greets are there. We've been to Raleigh. We had fun with John in Raleigh. And check out the meet and greets. There's I have to say this, when the Salieri Report subscribers gather and meet each other, there's something that happens. And the sane love meeting other sane people.
Yeah, right. It's nice to meet. it's nice to be not. It's nice to not be in a minority of sanity. You know, where you're the only sane person in a group of people. It gets old.
Well, it's funny. A lot of sane people think they're the only sane person, you know, but they haven't hooked up with a sane around them. So it's a matter of finding each other.
Right.
Anyway,
it is.
So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I look at our theme, the center really cannot hold. The center really cannot hold, but the sane can get together and hold.
Yes.
And that's what we have to figure out how we're going to do. How are we going to connect and find the sane? And how are we going to, you know, hold the line?
Yeah.
You know, it's militia time. What can I say?
We're getting there.
Here's what's funny. One of the reasons I moved to Tennessee, and I think one of the reasons you moved to North Carolina, there's something about the Southern culture. You know, the Southern culture is... you know, all I can't say enough good stuff about the culture in Tennessee. People really care about each other and they really try and be kind to each other and they're good at collaboration. I have so much respect for the Tennessee legislature, how much pressure and friction they have to deal with. And yet their manners are almost perfect.
Yeah, that's great.
Right. And it's hard. It's hard to do. They really work hard in doing it. If you are used to politics in Washington and New York, it's kind of like, wow, is this possible?
Yeah.
Because you don't see that in New York or in Washington in the same way. And so I have a lot of admiration for the culture. And to me, one of the things I need to work and do a better job at is do everything I can to preserve that culture.
Yeah.
Because that is the culture that's going to make it through. Because law isn't just what you do in the courts. It's what you do, you know, day to day in your everyday life.
No, the culture is what breathes life into it, no doubt.
Right. Yep. And it's what Mary Holland always says, courts follow culture. So we got to they do. Okay. Well, John Titus, it's a pleasure to do Money and Markets with you.
I got to tell you, I will be polling this weekend. I hope your subscribers will join me for the North Carolina State Wolfpack in the NCAA tournament. This is the first time, get this, this is the first time they've been in the Final Four since I was a sophomore in high school. A junior in high school in 1983.
Finally,
the team has been under a curse. That's a whole different story. I can explain that another time. The curse has been busted this year, and they are now in the Final Four again. It is by far the underdog story of the year, if not the decade in sports.
When's the game?
The game, there's the semifinal is Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern against Purdue. Very tough opponent.
Wow.
So,
okay.
And then the final,
nobody called John on Saturday.
Yeah. I'll be, there's one of the few times I'll be in front of a TV though, in a bar or restaurant with the volume. I won't be able to hear what they're saying. I just want to watch the game with some friends.
Good.
Been a long time.
Well, have a blast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on Money and Markets. We will talk to you next week.